is James from SurvivalPunk.com, and I'm here with an interview show. There will be no Couch Potato Mike. There will be a Gary Collins, though. Gary, who I've had on the show a lot, several times now, maybe even as much as Jeff Radke. He is back this time not to talk about nutrition, primal, or paleo lifestyle. He is here this time to talk about his new book, Going Off the Grid. I have a copy. I bought it. So that's the rule. If you have friends that do stuff, you support them. I support Gary. So I've not read the book completely yet, but I've definitely thumbed through it, read a few things. Very well written. And there are not a lot of books out there on going off the grid. And a lot of them are sort of... Sometimes people just pencil whip books because they're book writers. They don't know anything about the subject except for what they find in their research. And you get the same book over and over and over. Like a lot of the survival books out there. They're basically the Army survival field manual over and over and over. So when you find a new book with actual practical experience, it's a breath of fresh air, my friends. And that's what you get in Gary's Going Off the Grid book. I would like to apologize. I felt that my timing in this episode, my normal, charming, vocal veracity was messed up. It was my anniversary with Serenity. Happy anniversary. And there was like some last minute changes to the schedule of doing the podcast. Because, you know, when you have an anniversary, you kind of got to do that first. So to be able to take her to see her 50 Shades of Monkey, whatever that was, and eat Mexican, I had to push off the interview with Gary till later, and then that was sort of like, that threw me off, and then one of Mike's children went missing during the podcast, and you hear Mike and his wife outside yelling for their nephew that they have living with them, who went on a walk and took a little bit longer to get back than he said he was going to, or that he was supposed to, one or the other, I don't know. So there's that. By the way, he is safe. He just walked a bit longer than was anticipated and couldn't hear them because he was too far away. So yeah, still a lot of good information in this podcast episode. There'll be some fun. You will get some nuggets of going off the grid info, and I hope you enjoy them. And I also hope that you pick up Gary's book, which is a really good read. And if you plan on at any point in the future going off the grid, this is what you need. This will save you a lot of headache and wasted money, and you will be able to spend the money wisely. That was my alarm clock. I need to quit recording things when my alarm's about to go off. But yeah, good stuff in the book, good stuff in the podcast interview. Enjoy. And one last bit of housekeeping before we jump into it. Since now, we announced the Survival Punk Facebook challenges, and you can participate if you don't have a Facebook. That's fine. You can always email it to me, james@survivalpunk.com. And because the last week's winner was simply an email submission, so good on that guy. This week's, and I guess I didn't announce it last week. I don't really know what happened there, but the Survival Punk Challenge, and I need to go post it in the group, but the Survival Punk Challenge this week is to go out into the wild and procure a food. It doesn't have to be a big food. You can go out into the wild and you can video yourself eating grub worms. You can go out there and find a wild edible. You can go out there and, you know, it's not deer season, but you can, if you can legally, or, you know, it's a private group, so whatever. If you can show yourself hunting or trapping an animal and eating it, then that would work. Past pictures and stuff will not work. This is a, now you have a week to go out in the woods and find a thing to eat. I guess if you really want bonus points or gross points, you can go out and pull a Bear Grylls and eat fruit out of bear poop. Not really saying you're going to win that way, though. I don't think you're going to win the contest by eating bear poop. But any interesting wild edibles, any interesting methods that you personally do to trap an animal and eat them, awesome. We do kind of want to respect laws. I don't want anyone getting arrested. So finding insects and plant-based wild edibles, probably the easier solution. If you can legally hunt and or trap an animal and show me eating that animal, awesome. I would love to see it. So that's the Survival Punk Challenge, and I will be participating. I'll shoot a video, go out in the woods, find something, eat it. Yum. And with that, let's welcome back Gary Collins of the Primal Power Method and author of many books, many supplements, and the new Growing Off the Grid book. All right, I'm going to welcome back onto the show Gary Collins. Gary, how are you?
Good, James. Thanks for having me on again.
All right, it's always you pretty much are one of the few people that have an open invitation to come onto the show anytime you want. So,
well, thanks for that. I really appreciate that. I like doing your show. There's a few shows that I really like a lot. And, you know, it's fun because we talk a little bit about everything. I got a wide repertoire, as people are finding out. I could talk about a lot of different stuff.
Right. And it, you are kind of a brother from another mother that, we can rant and talk about a lot of things. And then we're like, fuck, we've talked for 2 hours. We've barely even touched the subject. And now both of us have to go do something like, whatever. So I will remotely try to keep it on topic remotely. I didn't. So normally I try to plan out 10 questions to ask. I'm like, that's Gary. I'll just write down like 7 because then we'll probably still be like an hour. We'll be too loaded anyway. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And then my poor co-host who's going to sit this one out, he always is just sitting there the whole time, like fiddling and stuff. Like he can't even get a word in, and we're nerding out so much. He's like, "I don't, yeah, no, guys, sorry." So I'm like, "You sit this one out, and me and Gary will have fun."
Yeah, we do. We get on our rants.
We do.
We just like to BS. I mean, the world's a funny place. People are interesting and strange anymore. So yeah, we both have similar views.
Yes. So normally I start out the question with who is blah, blah, blah. Hopefully the listener should know who Gary Collins is. We will give an introduction because, at this point, if you Google Gary Collins, you may still get a recently deceased actor or random other like people like Gary Collins, Doctor of Dentistry. Which, you know,
there's a few of us out there. And unfortunately, the Gary Collins who used to do Our Magazine back in the day. I remember that because it was on normal TV and my parents used to watch it and my dad's name was Gary Collins. So it was, I'm slowly gaining on him now. You could do a search now if you put Primal Power Method and I come up number one, but Gary Collins is a crapshoot. So yeah, if you see some guy who got thrown in jail and is now dead, that's not me. Okay. I promise you.
All right. I think that covered who Gary Collins isn't, and we will talk about that. So, your new book, you have a new book, Going Off the Grid.
Yep.
You sent me a copy, and I'm like, fuck this. So I went and ordered it, because, you know, you you support your friends. That's what you do. And I was like, well, I can't do an unboxing video on an email. Like that literally would be the end of my YouTube career. Like, this is James from Trialpunk, and I'm going to open an email for you guys. And it's like, yeah, James, you're not allowed on YouTube ever again. So, I went and bought a copy like the day you're like, oh, they come out Friday. And I'm like, Amazon Prime, like I'll have it the day they come out. Like, I think I got mine the same day you got your copies. So
probably,
yeah. You know, so, going off the grid. So you wrote a book about going off the grid. Why did you decide you wanted to go off the grid?
Well, and to preamble, everyone kind of knows me for the health side, the health, nutrition, exercise, because that's how I started off with my business and writing books. But it was a primal side, so it tied into the survivalist prepper community, self-reliance, which was surprising at the time because no one was really doing it. No one was actually, you know, in the survivalist communities really talking about health that I saw, you know, a little bit, Yeah, nothing relatable. And, you know, someone else found me in the survivalist community and they were like, hey, you're kind of in our community. I went, I just do my own thing. You know, I created this company on health and nutrition because that's what I'm passionate about. You know, I did 20 years in the government, multiple things, you know, got sick of that and ended up doing, you know, this health and nutrition company. But at the same time, even before I started that company, I was already looking for my land. For going off the grid. So I consider myself kind of way before it became trendy. I was just looking to do it and I wasn't even going to talk about it. I was just doing it. And I started it and I went, you know what? People start asking me questions and I went, God, I better start documenting this stuff and writing it down. And I soon realized that there wasn't a whole lot of material out there as I was researching it. It was kind of a gray area. You know, it was, yeah, there's a lot of people that have done it. But A, they don't want to be found, most of them.
Yeah.
And B, if they do, they really haven't put it together. It's more of, you know, they may have a blog or, you know, like Backwoods Home Magazine touches on it. And there's a couple other magazines that will touch on it. And then all those shows came out. But I looked at it as just like my health stuff. I do it in a more organic way. You know, it was more of I was just following my own path. You know, I didn't have an interest in a TV show or to write a book. It was more my journey. So it started about 10 years ago and I started looking at land, but the boom was still going on with property and houses and all that. So land was just ridiculous. It was so expensive, anything buildable, that I kind of put it on the back shelf for a couple years till things kind of cooled down. I ended up moving again with the government transferring. And then I got out and left the government and, just life happened. And I kind of decided, you know, a couple events as you get older, you kind of go, hey, I'm getting older. I need to get off my ass and do this or it's just never going to get done. And I'd already done my initial research as far as land, where I was looking. And I really liked Northeast Washington. I'd been working there. I'd worked some cases up there, when I was in the government. And I had a friend who lived on the northwest side of Washington, but I didn't really like that very much. I wanted more remote and something a little closer to how I grew up, because I grew up pretty remotely, even though I grew up in California. I grew up in the sticks out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I tell people I lived basically almost off the grid. The only thing we had was power. We had our own septic system. We had our own well, and we used a friggin' TV antenna to get our TV. There was no cable or any shit like that. Mm-hmm. So I got like four channels, you know, that was it. And they were all, I think two of them were fuzzy. Yeah. So it made for interesting watching sports. So it was kind of going to that. And so as I started doing it, like I said, I just started documenting it, started putting it all together. People were asking me questions. So I kind of gauged what people were looking for. And I just wrote the book as I went and I'm still going. Anyone who's, and I've talked to a ton of people who have built off the grid and been living off the grid for a long time. And we all say the same thing. It never ends. It's a continuous process. You're never done. No. You're always building. You're always adding. You're always maybe changing as technology changes, you know, putting in a new solar array, putting in, you know, wind turbine. So there's a whole lot of stuff that goes in it. But I'm glad I wrote it because I've gotten really good feedback And the feedback that I've mainly gotten is, oh God, I wish I would have read this before I built my house. And this was people who were tied into the grid.
Yeah.
So far. It's been both. They're like, oh, this book's just good if you're just going to build a house in general.
Oh, especially stuff on contractors. Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Dealing with, actually, I get hit all the time on that. Actually, a guy emailed me who lives in the area where I'm at in Northeast Washington. And he goes, I started building my house. He goes, I'm buying your book because I know there's some nuggets in there. He's listened to the stuff I've been on before. And he goes, I saw your videos on contractors. He goes, I'm dealing with the same shit right now. And I go, exactly. I've been dealing with contractors for 20 years. And people go, well, how can you get screwed? I go, you just don't understand. If you've never dealt with contractors, you have no idea what it's like. You know, every once in a while, someone gets lucky and deals with a contractor and everything turns out peachy. Mm-hmm. I'd say that is definitely an anomaly. I mean, you got to be very lucky for that to work out that way. Because just building a house in general, it never goes smoothly. I'm not being negative. It's just stuff happens. It's a house. Uh-huh. I mean, certain things, a certain sub won't show up. Certain sub screws up or they quit. There's always something going on. And so that section, yeah, I've gotten a lot of feedback because I was pretty blunt. You know, at this point in my life, dealing with so many of these knuckleheads that I just had to say it how it is. Mm-hmm. I basically profiled the average contractor and said, this is where they come from. I grew up with them. There's some that I grew up with. I wouldn't even let them step foot in my house and they're friends of mine.
Wow.
You know, that's how the business is. It's just shady. And, you know, for me, you know, people just kind of, oh God, Gary, that's so negative and this and that. God. And I just went, you know, and a couple contractors got really pissed off. They're all, you just have a bad experience. Contractors aren't really that way. And I go, you know what? If you're a contractor and you're offended by that, you're probably one of those shitty contractors I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If you're not offended, it means you're a good contractor and you're laughing because you get a bunch of business off people who have to come to you after dealing with the crappy ones.
Yeah. You know? For a while there, like when I had cable TV or satellite or one or the other, every once in a while I get randomly hooked on shows, and I got hooked on a show called Homes on Homes. And yep. He went around and would basically show other contractors being shitty. Like they're like, they didn't do this, they didn't do this, like water damage has now destroyed this, you have black mold growing here. You know, it's all because and this show went on for several seasons. You know, houses. Okay, yeah, I didn't even know that. Yeah. So it's still going on for obviously, yeah, now for several seasons. And he's not running out of work finding shitty contractors who have ruined people's homes.
Well, he went to a different, he helps people buy homes now. I think it's Buy It Right, I think, something like that. He came out with a new show and basically he goes through homes that are already built and then goes through and inspects them. He's the inspector, basically.
Okay.
So he just changed his format because he probably got sick and tired of fixing other people's crap. And, Adam Carolla actually did it. He did a Sting show. Oh, God, what was it called? I can't remember. But he went around Southern California and he would actually, people would write him and they would tell them their horror story. Well, what he would do is he would lure the contractor back and expose him and show all this shitty work and make the guy come back and fix it.
Yeah.
And I only saw a couple episodes of that. It was too painful. I was like, I can't watch any more of this. It's excruciating watching this stuff. And because Adam Carolla, people don't realize he was a contractor before he became famous. That's what he did. He was a Finnish carpenter, I think one, and also I think he may have been a general contractor. But he worked in the contracting industry for years before he ever became a stand-up and became famous. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That actually does sound like an interesting show.
Well, he did another one where he actually remodeled his dad's house and flipped it. That was a funny – oh, God. His stuff's funny because the guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he used to rip on, what was that show on ABC with that douchebag that now does loan commercials? Oh, God. Ty, what's that guy's name? Is it Ty Pennington or something like that?
Oh, yeah, 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 that show. The Trading Spaces, was that it?
Something like that, And Adam Carolla had him on and just ripped him anew, and the guy had never even swung a hammer in his life, come to figure out. And Adam, the guy didn't know that Adam Carolla was a former contractor, and he started asking him technical questions, and the dude was just like, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't think I've ever seen an episode of that show, but I've seen him talk and stuff, and you can tell that Ty Pennington guy had no idea what he's talking about. He might as well be a gay interior designer. That's probably what he was.
Well, exactly. And just to show people that just that show, I mean, everyone thought this guy had real background in construction and he had none. Well, I'll tell you what, there's contractors exactly like that, that literally have done nothing in their lives except for sleep in on their mom's couch. And they suddenly decide that they're going to be a laborer because they can't get a job doing anything else because they're lazy.
Yeah.
And then they become general contractors and they are frightening. I mean, I have fired so many at this point in my life and literally escorted them right off the work site and say, get your tools and get the fuck out of here. Just get out of here. Get out of my sight. You are killing me right now. And it's just hard to explain to people when you're dealing with these people that it's almost an industry of a last ditch effort to make a living is what I call it. It's people who literally, and it's sad because it's an important industry. Building a house is really important, but it just seems to be a magnet for the people in life who really just don't give a shit about anything. And they end up in the construction industry, you know?
Yeah. I've seen that. I've seen a lot of people that's like it. Okay, I've seen a lot of really great people in construction, just to be honest. But I've also seen, like, basically, like, that crackhead, junkie, like, brother-in-law that everyone has. It's like, you know, he's just going to do construction work because they'll hire anyone. And, you know, it's like, you get some really bad people that just they can't get a job anywhere else because, you know, The hiring at the construction place generally isn't a rigorous background check and, you know, rigorous, like, you know, testing. Like, can you pick up something heavy? Oh, yeah, okay, you can get a job.
It's can you fog a mirror? If you can breathe, you're going to get hired in the construction industry. There are no standards.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, like I said, I hate we're bashing. I'm sure there's probably contractors who listen to this for sure. But again, if you're a good one, I'm not talking about, and to get a good one, it makes your life, you know, there's really good contractors out there and they do really good work and you'll know it by your stress levels. You basically don't even know you're building a house almost. And it goes both ways. I mean, people who have never built a house or had a house built, they don't know anything. So they're coming in and they're running. They could run a good contractor through the mill too. And I've heard, you know, I know really good contractors who get screwed and the customer never pays them, you know, basically. And, you know, kept change orders and kept changing everything. And next thing they know, they're in court. So it goes, don't get me wrong. It goes both ways. Mm-hmm. But by going off the grid, what you have to realize, there is no middle ground as far as you have to be involved in the project. It's not like you can go get a track home off the grid. You know, there's not that. You will be involved heart and soul in this project one way or another. And it's good and bad. It's one of those where, yeah, you're going to be more involved than any, you know, house you've ever owned. The upside is it's going to be done your way and it's going to be your project and it's going to be your dream. And that's why I tell people too, because they go, well, hey, did you put like house plans in there and you tell me exactly how to do it and how to, you know, level my lot. I go, I go, you're thinking track home world again. Off the grid means it's a unique piece of land in a unique area that you have to figure out on your own. I can't give you a template for a house specifically for what you want. It's all, everyone's going to use different materials. They're going to build it a different way. They're going to use different alternative energy, you know, depending where they're at, how much sunlight, wind. Are they near a creek? You know, can they use hydro? Do they have a bunch of money? Can they use geothermal? There's so many different ways to go. But I explain it all in the book. I go through all of this because I had to research all of it. You know, just because I built my house a certain way doesn't mean that I did not research all the other avenues in order to build a house off the grid. I did. I had to research all of it. And I looked into every avenue, and what I came up with was unique to my situation. Mm-hmm. But I try and go through and explain from, you know, going out and looking for your land to building it. And, you know, I talk about septic. I talk about, you know, alternative power systems. You know, I talk about wind power. I talk about everything that we talked about, different types of construction. You know, I talk about dealing with contractors. I even go into, you know, some basic tools that you might want to get before you start on this just to have.
Yeah.
So I kind of try and cover the whole gamut so someone who's interested in it won't be lost. That's basically, it's my story along with a how-to to follow it along. To say, hey, I did it this way, but here's another way you can do it as well. You know, because I also talked to and seen a bunch of different types of properties. You know, I just didn't go into it willy-nilly and just throw something up. You know, I spent a lot of time researching and looking at other properties and looking at off-the-grid houses and seeing what works in our area. So.
Yeah, you touched on so many good points there. You know what? And I didn't even have it in my notes, but you definitely talk on. You mentioned tools there, and there are. If you're going to build an off-grid home, you're going to need a decent collection of tools, and there's definitely some that you can, some that are worth owning, and then some that you either borrow or rent. Because a lot like Lowe's and whatnot, all of the big major hardware places will let you rent tools, you know, like an air nailer, air gun, you know, for a day or so. And on some of that stuff, like, it would make life a lot easier to use it, but you really won't need it long term after that. You know, whereas like good hammer, good nails, a good drill. Don't get a shitty electric drill, but a good, like, when I was building my tiny house, you know, I went and bought a DeWalt 2-battery electric drill. An impact drill would be really nice. So a lot of times you can find a drill and an impact drill combo that would be worth having. My jigsaw I use almost religiously, a chop saw. Oh, you know, if you can't afford it, and don't have room for it. Yeah, a chop saw is one of those things where you can rent, but a chop saw will make your life so much better, especially during the build process. If you're going to be the one, you know, doing a lot of the building, like, so much better.
Well, and that's what I kind of base. I'm a tool guy anyway. I've always used my hands and built stuff. I'm no expert by any stretch, but, you know, I consider myself somewhat handy. Mm-hmm. I've always had my own tools, power tools and everything. But for this, I had to start over because the stuff I had before was good for remodeling, but it wasn't good for building. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was old. Like my DeWalt cordless set was like 10 years old. So the batteries barely held a charge anymore. And mm-hmm. I looked into buying new batteries and I ended up going with Milwaukee this time. I'd been a loyal DeWalt guy. But all the contractors and guys who I knew in the business all used DeWalt, went to Milwaukee now. So I went and waited for deals through Home Depot, mm-hmm. and I got some pretty good deals, and I bought them piecemeal because I didn't want the package. There were certain tools that I wanted for certain jobs, mm-hmm. and I got a table saw. I've always had a miter saw. And I'm probably going to buy another one this summer because I'm using an old one that I've had for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, yeah, sure. In the end, good generator, you know, all this stuff is very important, you know, but in the end, I probably spent between $1,500 to $2,000 for everything. And if I had to, I could build a house with everything I have. But, you know, people go, oh, my God, that's a lot of money. I go, yeah, but I'm going to use this stuff. It's not going to just sit even after I'm done with the house. I'm going to build a garage later on. I'll probably build a couple more sheds. And just having these tools around, not only that, but it helps my helper who comes up and helps me. He doesn't have to haul his tools up.
Yeah.
You know, because my roads are brutal. And he has a trailer. He has a tool trailer. That's pretty big. So it saves him destroying his trailer and his tools flying all over the place. Saves him time and setup, because when he comes up, I've got everything set up. We're ready to roll. So when he steps foot on the job site, there's no 30 minutes to an hour of him getting all this stuff out, putting it away. I put everything away. I do all the cleanup. And that's another thing, is being smart about the project. You know, helping your contractors out, making it easier on them to get the job done faster. And I'll tell you what, contractors love it when you do that. They hate cleanup. They hate toting around all their own tools if they don't have to. They just want to get to the job site and work and bust the job out, the good ones. And so that's what I've done. And I got the deals. I mean, God, I got the table saw 10-inch for $299. I got it on sale. Nice. It's a $499 table saw. You know, the miter stand, and that's another thing. If you have a miter saw, get a stand. I bought the stand for $89, and it is awesome. And they're all portable. So I can wheel, the table saw is portable, has wheels on it, folds up. The miter saw stand folds up, and I can move it all around the property because it's got wheels. It's just thinking like that. You have to think differently in a property like this. And, you know, the basic tools I talk about is, you know, you got to have a shovel. If you don't have a shovel, I don't even know what you're doing. I've always had a shovel. I have a shovel in my truck right now.
Yeah.
A post hole digger.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That comes in useful. Post-hole.
Yeah. You know, probably a good sledgehammer, you know, and then your cordless tools, and then having a real rake, you know, a steel rake, not the funky one you use in suburbia.
Right.
You know, that's made out of plastic, but a real steel rake. And those are all tools that are really cheap. You're going to use them, you know, a shop broom. This stuff is going to get used a million times over, and it's better to purchase it. And even if you don't use it, or you don't use it later on, you can go pawn it, sell it on Craigslist. You'll get your use out of it, and you sell it, and you get some money back.
Yeah. Tools are one of those things, like, you will not struggle to sell off some tools.
No, you'll go in a day.
Yeah. If every pawn shop will take tools, Craigslist, you will not have trouble selling tools or finding tools if you need some tools.
Finding them.
Yeah, it's a good place for that. So,
yeah. And you can do that too. That's a good point, is you can buy all this stuff used if you want to. The guy who helps me, he buys a lot of his tools used off Craigslist, but he's brought stuff up there and it's broken. It doesn't work. So it's one of those, it's good and bad. I've bought tools off Craigslist in the past. They work fine, but I'm more of a guy when, you know, I'm doing a project of this scope, I'm going to buy new tools, because if something breaks, and I've broken several tools already, I take them right back and I get a new one for free because they're under warranty.
Yeah.
You know, you break one that you buy used, well, now you got to go buy another one used and go get another one.
Yeah.
So in the end, save any money? Maybe, maybe not.
I was going to say, there's sort of a hierarchy of what is able to be bought, you know, used. Like, I've worked with a guy before that would buy only, like, used junk, like just junk, and he just spent more time trying to repair shit than actually using it, you know, and then have a collection of just broken shit, you know. And it's like, okay, buy a used, like, you know, 100-year-old chisel, yeah, that's probably a good idea, you know. Buying a used weed eater with, like, pieces broken off of it, because maybe you can use it a little bit and, you know, you can repair it and no, just go buy a fucking new weed eater, dude.
Yeah, they're not that expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, just buy a new one. And, you know, so, you know, like, if you're going to buy a nice, so yeah, a lot of old American-made steel, you know, high-carbon hand tools, probably not, you know, buying them used is a good idea, because obviously they don't make them anymore. You know, but a lot of, like, the electrical tools, the probably just buy them, you know, new. That's the way to go there.
Well, and they're so cheap now. I mean, the cordless stuff used to be really expensive for the higher end stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, today the contractor level stuff is expensive. Don't get me wrong. You probably don't want to buy that unless you absolutely have to. But you want to buy a level up of the consumer. So you want to get, like, brushless drill, brushless driver, You know, because you can use them. They have more torque, and you don't have to replace the brushes. If you're going to use this stuff a lot, you don't want to go and have it replaced. But, you know, like finding a Worm Gear table saw. Those new are like $400. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're stupid expensive now because the Worm Drive doesn't break. But the old Craftsman ones that have been around that weigh about 50 pounds...
Yeah.
If you get that used, that's better probably than the brand new one.
I'm sure.
Even 50 years old. I mean, the thing is probably better. So, I mean, there's certain things, but even those tools, like the old tools like that, are expensive used because people now know they're worth money because they're built so much better than the newer stuff.
Yeah.
So it depends. Yeah, you got to pick your battles. Here and there, you know, and using like I have a cordless table or a cordless skill saw. Yeah, that's okay for certain things, but you're going to want a corded one for power.
Yeah.
Because those cordless ones, circular, they just don't have enough power and to get through stuff. And you can pick up, you know, a decent used one or even a new one for under $100. I've had mine for 15 years. Yeah, the corded one.
Yeah.
And that's where you have to make choices too. And I don't know if I got into that in the book, but that's probably a good topic is you're going to have a balance of corded tools and cordless. So you're going to have to have a generator. You can't just roll and say, I'm going to use all cordless and charge them all up. And that's it. You're going to have a generator.
Yeah.
I mean, and a good one. I don't go out and buy that used either. I know people have done it, but here's the problem with generators. It's hours on them, and you have no clue when you buy these things used how many hours they have on them. And if you search around for just a straight gas generator, I've got a Westinghouse. I've had that 5 years now. I've put a lot of hours on that thing. I bought it off Costco for, I want to say it was $5.99, and it was a 7,500-watt generator.
Not bad.
The thing's bulletproof. It's starts on the first pull every time. It had an electric starter, but my contractor who I fired broke it. Nice. Yeah, exactly. But I'm like, I can pull it. No big deal.
Yeah.
But it also has wheels on it, and it's not too big to where I can drag it around. It weighs about 200 pounds with gas in it, full with gas. But it's got wheels on it, and I drag it all over the property. I'm not getting that thing in the back of my truck, though. I'm not going to be able to pick that thing up without killing myself to get it in the truck. So you got to decide, okay, am I so remote that I need a generator, but I need one that I can pick up and move around and put in my vehicle? Well, if that's the case, well, you're going to have to go with the smaller one that's lighter, and those tend to be more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, I mean, there's so many things going on, but in the end, you're going to have your own set of tools. You're going to use them. They're going to get used. Unless you're rich, building off the grid too, I have yet to meet anyone who just had a contractor roll out and do the project beginning to end. I have yet to meet that person.
Well, yeah. Unless you have enough money to just throw at them. I think I saw something on Cody Lundin. I think he just contracted people to go build his house. Like, his is like a under the ground, desert, concrete, crazy. And I think, you know, I like Cody Lundin, mostly for the most part, kinda. I think he just threw money at them and like had them build it. So, yeah.
Well, that's the thing with that. I have a section in the book too about financing. You can't finance an off the grid project.
No, you have to have the money.
You got to have the money, or you're gonna have to take a personal loan at 10% to 12%.
Right.
And you're gonna have to pay it back really quick. So. Cash is king, and I talk about that you have to plan, and that's like probably the first thing I talk about is having a plan. You know, you really need to think this through. You need to spend this project takes years. It's not like the TV shows where some, you know, mid 20 somethings go out and build a house in the middle of nowhere and they do it in 30 minutes. It just doesn't work that way. There's a lot of planning that goes into it. You know, you've got to buy your land first. You know, you got to search for your land. Land is getting harder and harder to find.
Yep.
And especially anything buildable that's worth a shit is really hard to find. I got lucky with mine. Well, I shouldn't even say luck. I spent years looking for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I put my time in. I looked at hundreds of properties. And, you know, I'd had properties before. This was the third house I'd had built. You know, first off, the grid one. First one was a track house. Second one was more of a custom house in a residential neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And this third one is basically a custom off-the-grid house. So, and that's why you have to look at an off-the-grid house. Even if you're trying to do it on the cheap, it's a custom built house. Technically, no matter how you spin it, it's custom built. And with that, certain things are going to cost more because not a lot more. And that's what the thing about contractors will try and get you is they'll say, well, your building's smaller and it's more remote. So it's going to cost you like double, triple. And you got to call their bullshit. They use this. I heard this from numerous contractors when I was interviewing them. I went, this isn't my first rodeo, jackass. Don't give me that crap. Don't give me the I don't know any better. It doesn't cost that much more.
No.
You know, I would say a realistic markup would be 20-25% on certain things. Other than that, no. And a lot of them will try and double and triple you up. And they'll just say, well, you just don't get it. This house is going to be double what I usually do. And you're like, that, no. You're just trying to get more money out of it.
Yeah.
Is all you're trying to do. And once they learn that you have to pay cash because it's off the grid, be really leery. Because they smell cash, they smell blood. Because now there's no bank, you know, to backstop everything or a construction loan. That there has to be a lot in a construction loan that you get through a bank. There's a lot of, you know, T's that need to be crossed and I's that need to be dotted before the bank will even pay the contractor out. So totally different animal. And that's what I mean. You got to be really, really careful. You're going to have to be really involved. But in the end, what you end up with is a really nice house that is your dream. It should be, for the most part, paid off. You won't owe anything on it because you had to pay cash. And, you know, you're doing something that you want to do. I think in the end, it's well worth it. But I wanted to make it clear to people because after watching a million shows, as I'm sure you have, I love watching those tiny home and off the grid shows. But a lot of them are based in complete utter bullshit. I mean, there's very little truth to what's going on there. You know, the show has a vested interest for the project to go smoothly and quickly.
Yeah.
You know, the show is financing a lot of it. It's not the people building the place. They're saying, oh, well, we have to. No, if they had to come up with the money, they wouldn't get this thing built in 8 weeks.
Or less. You know,
or less.
Some of the tiny house shows I watched was like, you know, a 3-day build or a 7-day build. And, you know, on those, they have a crew of experienced builders that do this full time. And, yeah, you know, they've got the budget to knock it out. And, you know, they know what they're doing. They can just do it. And that's not like, one, the listener, do not have the money to throw money at problems more than likely, or you're probably not listening to this podcast on building, you know, an off-grid house. You're really not. You probably already have your house and you don't care. It's unrealistic. More realistically, I've seen a few tiny house documentaries where it's like, a year later, and the house is like half finished or so. Like, you know, it takes time and money. And you usually, most of the time, people tend to run out of money because things cost more than you, you know, like anywhere you look online, I built my tiny house for $3.58. No, you didn't. You can't even buy a pack of screws for that, guys. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
that's why I thought the book was important, because everyone who knows me and knows how I am knows I don't BS. I give it to you straight how it is, whether you want to hear it or not. That's what you get,
yeah.
You know, and I felt that it was important to do the book for that fact, because a lot of people in our communities are at least interested in it.
Yeah.
But there's not very much information on it, and the homesteading. And that's where people get confused, too. Homesteading and living off the grid are not the same.
No.
They can be one and the same, but they're technically two different things. Homesteading, I'm not homesteading. I'm living off the grid. That's different. You know, usually homesteaders, most homesteaders I know, buy the property all ready to go for the most part. You know, and then they're going to homestead. They're going to bring in their animals. They're going to have their greenhouses. They're going to try aquaponics. They're going to do all this stuff. That's different. You know, building an off-the-grid house is basically starting from scratch. Literally, there's nothing there. You've got a bare piece of land, and you got to figure it out from nothing. And like we said, the shows are just – they're La La Land, and the teeny home thing kills me. I still cannot understand how that has traction because I'm a travel trailer guy. I live in my travel trailer half the year. And I've been living it full time for, gosh, 3+ years now. And I'm on my 3rd travel trailer in my life. And that's what I recommend. I talk about that too. Hey, you might want to try travel trailer living before you do this. The tiny home thing is basically a glorified travel trailer that is like 5 times more expensive and really heavy and really dangerous. I don't get that movement. I'm really puzzled by it. Because they're promoting all this freedom and you move your house and this and that. And I go, travel trailers have been around since, what, the 50s? Maybe even before that? Why would you waste a bunch of money on a shed on wheels, basically, that is 2 to 3 times as heavy as well? And they use all the components of a travel trailer in it.
Yeah.
if it's done right. They use the travel trailer refrigerator. They use the travel trailer stove and microwave and toilet. And I'm all, I'm just puzzled. I don't even get where this came from. Go buy a goddamn travel trailer. They're already ready to roll. They're ready to do. They're built for exactly what you're trying to do. And they have a multitude of them with multiple layouts, multiple lengths, multiple insulation values. Whatever you want to do, they're built for today. You can get, I mean, these teeny homes, I priced one for my book, one of the main builders of tiny homes, and I got to differentiate. There's 2 types of tiny homes. There's a tiny home that is built on a property that is permanent, that is considered 500 square foot or less. Mm-hmm. Then there's the tiny home that's on a rolling chassis, which is basically a travel trailer chassis, steel chassis, with a small house built on this chassis. That's the difference. They're still technically teeny homes, but there's 2 different variants, and that makes it confusing as well. Yeah. But for me, travel trailers today are really, really nice. And I bought my last one brand spanking new, all season, fully insulated, wood cabinets, beautiful travel trailer, $25,000, brand new. And it's built for off-road. So it's got a different suspension system in it. And it sits about 6 inches higher. So if I want to take it off road, it will go off road. If you take one of those teeny homes off road, you're going to have that thing flipped in a ditch in about 10 minutes. They're not stable and they are not built for that. You're going to be putting that thing on flat land, period. So I don't know. What do you think? I mean, it's a bad move.
Yeah, well, I like the movement in some ways, in that a lot of people are realizing that our housing situation is completely bullshit. I had no intention of ever living, you know, my entire life paying a mortgage for a house and being in debt at my eyeballs. I went the route I think that you would agree is the better route. I did not build my tiny house because I live in a tiny house on wheels. I live in a tiny house meant to basically stay here. I basically bought a custom-made Amish shed and then turned that into my tiny house. You know, I put in the windows, I put in the interior walls, the wiring, all that stuff. It's not meant to be moved. I have moved it. Because it is a retrofitted shed. Anyone that can haul sheds can move my house. So, I did actually pick up and bug out of the location I was originally parked on to a new location. And that was for, I think I moved it over 100 miles for about $1,000 which is not bad at all. Yeah. You know, paying a guy to come pick up my house and move it. I did have to empty the house out, obviously, because one, like you said, weight restrictions. You know, taking a shed and turning it into a tiny house, you obviously have insulation. I, instead of drywall, because I don't really like the aesthetics of drywall, I went with stained plywood walls so I can see the wood grain. Looks really cool. Good. You know, and that's one of the things you get when you sort of build your own house is, you know, you're like, you can do what you want.
Let me state, I probably confuse people. I'm a big fan of the permanent tiny home.
That's what I was saying. I believe that we agree on that.
One is stupid as all get. It makes no sense because you could build a permanent one and buy a travel trailer for less than one of those stupid rolling ones will cost you today.
Yeah, you said you priced it out. Your price that was around 80,000. I thought you said $40,000 to $80,000.
It was kicking 80.
Yeah.
And on the show, I just watched this young couple paid 120 grand for theirs.
Right.
And it was cool. Don't get me wrong. It was cool, but it was no bigger than my travel trailer. It was basically maybe a little bigger, but I went, why? Okay. Their whole point is freedom. How the hell is freedom paying 120 grand for a glorified travel trailer that is going to be worth about 30 grand when you go to try and sell it? If that, I can't wait till these things come on the market because you're not going to be able to get rid of them and people aren't paying anything for them.
No,
you know, it's a horrible, horrible investment. And just logically, it makes no sense to go that route. And if you don't like it, now you're stuck with $120,000 150 to 200 square foot tiny home.
Yeah. Anything like that price range, I just can't imagine. If you're able to throw it together for like a few grand, like my house, my budget that I spent so far, you may actually like pass out. I am probably somewhere around 7 or 8 grand. And yeah, I've been living in it for like 2 years now. You know, so.
It's very dope. And you did it the right way. Me and you talked about this before because I know multiple people have done it exactly the same way you did. They went out and the one guy who did it, who I know who actually sold me my travel trailer, helped, worked at the dealership. He was in construction prior. He went into this and what he did is instead of building it, he knew how to build the thing himself, the teeny home, but he went, you know, it's too much work. He went out and got a shed. A nice shed, yeah, and brought it up in, you know, modular, put it together and then finished it. Just did the finish work. You can get a really, really nice shed for 5 grand. I mean,
yeah,
big, nice.
Yeah.
And it comes in pieces. They'll deliver the thing to you and it's built like a house. I mean, all you got to do is go in and finish the thing off.
That's exactly what I did. Yeah, you know, I spent around 5 grand for it and they delivered it. And a really bad off the road condition, terrible roads, delivered the finished thing. And you know what? I even looked at the price because, you know, I could have built the frame, I could have built the stuff, and literally buying the part, buying the lumber and stuff and all the screws and all the would have cost more. Literally, a lot of these people, they get their, they get their lumber in bulk. So they get a better deal. They have all the tools. They have all the materials. For like 5 grand to build, mine was a little bit less. Mine was around four grand or so, 4,300 or so. That's with the delivery. That's insane. Of a couple hundred miles or whatever. And, just building that would have cost more time and money just in materials. So, yeah, that's the way, well, I have to recommend to go. And
I like that idea. For me, and people ask me why I didn't do that, I went because, again, I'm not against it. I thought of it and planned. I looked at yurts. I looked at a teeny home. My problem was that this is also Gary's dream home of life.
Yeah.
So I wanted to, this is probably the last place I'm going to build. If I'm sane, if I'm insane, I'll go and do another one to drive myself totally nuts. But, you know, this was like the last place I was going to build. I have these beautiful views there. It was just the way the property worked is the reason why I ended up with a higher end home and a bigger home than I originally planned, because I only had one building site. So if I would have stuck a teeny home on it, my problem was then I was stuck. I was, whatever I built was going to take up my building spot. So I had to really plan it smart and figure out, cause I'm on the top of a hill. I got a lot of granite. You can't just make another spot to build. It's where I built was where I had to build. And that's what I had. So in other situations, I would have built the teeny home first. And then if I wanted to add something to it later on, then I could have built something bigger and attached to it. Mm-hmm. Or make that the guest house or whatever. But in my situation, I just didn't have those options. Like I said, where I built is where I built. I built pretty much the biggest thing I could stick on there. And it's less than 1,100 square foot. So it's not even that big. But also I knew guests, family members, you know, people are going to come up there. I plan possibly to do workshops down in the future for people to come up and learn about the process. So I needed to have planned for other things, and I run my business. So I had to look at a whole lot of different avenues of what I was doing. But even like a yurt, here's a good example. Well, a yurt costs way more than your place. They're expensive.
Insanely more. And it doesn't make any sense for basically, you know, a big canvas tent to be that expensive.
Well, and not only that, but what's happened with the laws, and that's another thing, the laws are changing. They're starting to restrict wells in my area now. And I was told when I drilled my well 3 years ago that the company that came up goes, man, you're drilling at the right time because this stuff is going away. They're making it harder and harder to drill wells. You know, well, with that, people were putting temporary houses up like yurts. Well, the counties got smart and said, okay, now we're considering those permanent structures. So you have to get your yurt permitted exactly the same way as a house. There's no difference. So when I looked into a yurt, I think, gosh, it was like 400 square foot. It was small. By the time I did all the base for it, put it up, and again, I didn't have anywhere really to put it out of the way, it was going to either be an eyesore or I was going to have to put it right where the house was going to go, which meant I was going to have to tear it down at some point. By the time I got the thing livable, it was like $25,000.
Yeah.
And we're talking bare bones livable. I mean, and there's that, you know, there's not a lot of insulation in these things. You know, they're a glorified tent. They're a round tent.
Yeah. That's exactly what they are.
So, I mean, again, you could build like what you did, James, for, you know, a third to a quarter of the price. And, you know, building a small place, as you know, is actually pretty easy. It's when you get big is when it starts to become a major pain in the ass, because there's a hell of a lot more going into it, a lot more plumbing, a lot more electrical. There's all this stuff that you got to plan for. A small place, you know, you could do that under, anyone should be able to do it for under $10,000 if, you know, but then again, do you have a family? Okay, if you have kids, now you're going to need a little bigger one.
Yeah.
Now you may be out of the shed size.
Yeah.
Because sheds are only so big. Well, once you build a shed over in my county, it's 200 square foot. Now you got to get permits.
Yep.
Now it's not just a shed.
Yep.
Now it's a structure. And so that's what I mean. And I try and explain that all these things. I even talk about water rights in my book. Water rights have become very complicated. And I know people who are in squabbles right now over water rights with their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean. I wanted to try, and the whole point of the book was to clarify everything, to make it easier for someone trying to do it. Because I know for me, and I'm sure for you, man, it has been a pain in the ass and a learning experience, because I had nothing to go off of. I had to create this thing from nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, trying to just get my permits in and get everything organized through the county. Because I'm doing it differently, too. You used to be able to get away with just throwing structures up. No one would know, right?
Right.
Well, now they know. I've had my property reassessed 3 times already. County assessor comes out, goes around all my security fences, goes around all my stuff and comes and assesses my property. I've caught him on camera every single time. And I'm like, okay, the game's up. If you think you're going to sneak something in, you're dreaming. These counties need the money. And they're going to figure out what you're doing. And if you're doing something wrong, trying to squat on the property, build a illegal structure, you're going to get penalized and pay out the ass for it. So my attitude too was, I did this all by code. I did it all correct. I'll get my owner occupancy certificate in the end, which I explain in the financial section of the book. Why that's important is because then you can get a home equity line on your property. If you don't get that owner occupancy certificate, which means you didn't do it by code and you did not get, you know, you didn't get the proper permits, well, now you can't get that line of credit ever, and it's harder to sell that property.
Right.
Because now you basically have an unapproved structure, which I looked at. I looked at multiple properties where people were trying to upsell them with property, with buildings they had thrown up and were totally just hodgepodge together. Well, that actually lessens the property value, because now I got to knock that piece of shit down and haul all that stuff out of there and start over.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where, you know, you can get duped too, because there's people out there who started the process, did it completely incorrectly, and now they're trying to upsell you on something that kind of looks like a house, but you're not going to get it financed and it's not going to pass any inspections. So you're basically getting a wasted structure on there. And you have to look at that too, that this is not only, you know, it's also an investment. So the more half-assed you do everything, the more it's going to cost you later on in life if you ever have to get rid of it. It's hard. Matter of fact, my parents are dealing with this right now. They have a property that the houses were built in the 50s. And multiple additions were done, multiple changes without, you know, any permits, anything. They can't sell. They have to sell the property for cash because they cannot. No bank will finance the property because it's got a mobile home and two houses on it.
Wow.
And there's nothing they can do. Nothing will pass inspection. So it's a cash deal. They have been trying to sell that house for a year and a half. Sell the property.
Right.
They've got. So that's a lesson to be learned too, is that you eventually are going to have to get rid of this if you don't plan to give it to your offspring or, you know, your relatives or have someone inherit it or something goes wrong. You know, say you have an accident and, you know, now you got to be in town. You got to be near a hospital for the rest of your life. Well, what are you going to do if you can't get rid of that property?
Yeah.
What's going on there?
I don't know. They're yelling. I don't know what they're doing. Yeah, I don't know. it's always an adventure. I think we covered just about everything I had.
No, that's probably a good segue, hearing the yelling.
Yeah.
Security.
Yeah, security.
Other thing people kind of ignore, and I have a whole section on security on off the grid, because a lot of people who I talk to have gotten their stuff stolen. And everyone thinks that, again, watching those TV shows, that you've got no neighbors, no one knows you're there. No.
Yeah,
no. More likely, everyone knows you're there. They know you're there before you've even finished buying the property. You know, before you put one piece of stick in the ground, they know. And they're going to come up. And the lowlifes are going to steal your shit. And that's one thing I want to make clear too to people, is you have to have some sort of security system. Something. You know, you need gates. You need barbed wire. I mean, my property, I set it up pretty well. And the reason is because the first day, you know, we got the drilling rig up, some lowlifes came up and ripped stuff off the drilling rig for the well.
Yeah.
That night, we literally got it up that night. I went up the next morning. They had come up in the middle of the night and ripped everything off, stolen stuff off the drilling rig.
It's ridiculous. So,
yeah, I mean, stupid. I mean, they stole the tire chains and the tie-down straps. What are you going to do with that? I mean,
that's just petty. It's just feeling just a steal.
Yeah, and that's what you have to realize. So what it made me do is I had to spend, I think I ended up spending $4,000 or $5,000 in fencing and gates and, you know, security cameras and getting everything set up before I even put anything up because they'd tipped their hand. Well, the lesson was learned. I had always planned to make the property secure, but I was planning to do it once I got something of value on it, not realizing they were just waiting for anything.
Yeah.
So there's an important lesson there too, that, you know, just because you're more remote doesn't mean you don't have Yahoos around you. They're still there. They're everywhere today. They don't go away. And actually, the more remote you are, I would say there's a good chance of, well, how would I put it? Of a less, oh, just more of a dirtbag element can be around you, because a lot of these remote areas, people are squatting.
Yeah.
You know, they bought the land 20 years ago for $5,000 or whatever, or $500. You know, now they've dragged some beat up mobile home that they got for another $500 on there. You know, they cook meth in their bathtub all day. You know, you're never going to get away from that. So you have to know that you are still going to have neighbors, unless you're lucky enough to buy, you know, several hundred acres and surround yourself and build your place right in the middle of the thing.
Yeah. I was going to say that I had not seen a lot on off-grid security, except for your book and hearing you talk about it before. So that's that and contractors and finding your land are probably like those are your biggest selling points. And then you talk about off-grid internet and TV and, you know, like you said, septic tank and water and all that. So I really can't think of a reason not to recommend your book. Like you said, there's not many books written on building off the grid, going off the grid. You know, and I've looked at some of the other ones, and I only own one book about going off the grid. So I think that is a pretty big endorsement that, you know, of all the ones I've ever looked at, I've only bought one.
Well, thanks. And I try and do everything I do in my company, even all my health stuff. It's all by experience. You know, I don't write about or recommend anything that I haven't done or use. Even my product reviews, people, I tell them, I go, I found the product for me first. And then I thought it was such a good product that I reviewed it. Right. You know, that's how those come about. And it's the same way, you know, with the book is everything in there I've done, and I'm still working on the property. And people ask me, they go, hey, you're not even finished. I go, yeah, but the off the grid portion is done.
Yeah.
The stuff I have left is general construction that I've done before.
Exactly.
It's nothing. Yeah, it's nothing unique now. It's finish work. I got finish work left. And, you know, won't, yeah, I won't document a lot of that because what's the point? It's you could look up DIY videos all over the place and it's the same thing. I need to show you putting in cabinets. Nah, that's pretty general. You know, do I need to show you putting in, you know, my stove? No. Flooring? No. All right. That's all basic stuff. I mean, I'll show you the end result of everything that I do. Like I'll build some custom doors and I'll probably show you how I did that. But, you know, most part, a lot of the hard work's done. And I think the book overall is a good A to Z. I mean, I think I covered just about everything I could think of in there without it making it long-winded either, even though I can be quite long-winded when I talk. But my people are pretty amazed. They go, God, your books are really short. I go, yeah, because I don't have a lot of time for BS.
Yeah.
I just want the facts and let's move on.
Oh my
You know, God. I don't use a publisher that makes me write 400 pages on a topic. You know,
hate that.
I do.
I hate that.
Well, I didn't realize that some books are really long and annoying because the publisher made them write them that way.
I've seen that recently in another book I was reading, and I was pretty annoyed by that. I'm like, you keep repeating yourself paragraph for like it's rewording the same things, and I'm like, okay, yeah. At this point, I go into skim mode.
I do that too.
I think I'm going to have to get off here. I think there is a child missing next door. I think that's what the yelling is about. Yeah, what a fun way to end the podcast. I was distracted because I kept hearing him scream for Daniel. And I'm like, what the fuck's going on? And I'm like, I can't focus right now. So,
oh, no problem.
I'm going to do a search and rescue. Anyway. I guess. I don't know. But yeah, I think we covered everything. I had a fun chat as always. And, don't forget, Gary, to leave me that voicemail with the ad for your book so I can run that. Because you forgot.
That's right. I knew I forgot that. Yeah. I did forget that. Matter of fact, I can, I'll record it and send it to you in an audio file.
That'll work.
Is an MP3 fine?
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay, I'll do that, actually. I'll do that either tonight or tomorrow.
And then I guess there's no point in including it on this podcast. It'll come out Wednesday. But on the rest of them for the next, I don't know, couple weeks, month or two, you know, in that general early push to get your book sold, we'll run it in for a while. And then,
okay. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely want you to sell, about 40 billion books. So
me too.
Yeah.
So did you need me to give my website or you'll do all that in your intro outro?
Well, where can people find you? Yeah, I'll include links to your YouTube, which is awesome to follow, and then your Primal Power Method website. But where can people really find you the most? And where would you like people to buy your book from, by the way? Is Amazon the best place, or would you prefer them to – is there a direct method that makes you even more monies?
Well, obviously buying it from my website is the most direct way in which I don't have to pay Amazon their cut.
Awesome.
But it's wherever you want to go. I don't really care. Just buy the book. And if you buy it, please review it on Amazon. I'm a small-time self-published author, so those reviews are gold for me, and people hate doing them. But I really need those. I need those badly because other people have huge network marketing groups and the publishing companies and fake ones and all this, and I don't have that. So all my reviews are pretty critical for my books. But you could find me on Amazon. You look Gary Collins, Primal Power Method, or Going Off the Grid, it'll come up.
Yep.
My website is primalpowermethod.com. All my books are sold on my website as well. So you can get them there. All my social media is linked from my webpage, so you can find all that. And I want to give them some free stuff. I got two free resources for you. If you go to primalpowermethod.com/off-grid resources. Sign up in there, put your name and email in there, and you get two really valuable resources if you're interested in this topic or actually building your own place off the grid.
Awesome. That will be in the show notes, by the way.
Cool.
Absolutely. It's been great having you on, Gary. I look forward to talking to you anytime.
Well, thanks for having me, James, and hopefully you find Daniel.
I hope so, too. Talk to you later, Gary.